This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
Stephen K. Bannon, great to have you with us. Thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, always a pleasure. I'm a big fan of the show. It streams on our Getter and Rumble page. I'm a big fan of it. Watch it all the time.
Awesome to have it streaming on with you three times a week. But Steve, obviously a lot happening over there stateside, and those numbers have been hit regarding the election. The primaries are now over and it's now game on. So tell us your thoughts. It was inevitable it was going to happen. Obviously, Trump was going to get those numbers.
I'm not sure it was inevitable. I mean, okay. at the beginning, the RNC, the equivalent of the Tory party, rigged a system to try to, and Murdoch, the owner of the Times of London in the Sun, one of the most evil people in the world, really set up to rig the system against Trump. They remember in the emails in the Dominion lawsuit in discovery, they found emails of Murdoch in January and February 2021, when President Trump was actually at his nadir, right? He had just left. The election had been stolen. We couldn't turn things around. He left. All the Republican Party abandoned him, Mitch McConnell, all these guys, the whole team, McCarthy, the whole crowd. And Murdoch put out an email, said, we're going to make Trump a non-person, that Fox News was going to make Trump a non-person. And people think, well, Fox News is all powerful. Well, the war room wasn't having any of it. I mean, we could tell at the time they were promoting DeSantis. And so it was a DeSantis for a year and a half. They were all in a DeSantis. One of the biggest tells to me in the entire thing was when DeSantis, who has no inexperience internationally, right? So he can't be president of the United States. His team set up a tour over 4 days to go from South Korea to Tokyo, then to London. And the city, he went to the city of London. And for you Englishmen to think that, hey, your nation has collapsed and nobody cares, the city of London is still very important. And so he went to the city and he had a presentation set up, and they had the who's who, the accounting firms, the big law firms, the international banks, the hedge funds. Everybody was there to kind of weigh and measure this guy. At the time was beating Trump in the polls. And I had so many contacts there that told me after this, go, hey, we're in the business of weighing, you know, the empire is in the business of weighing and measuring people. This guy does not add up. This guy does not come across as a guy. He comes across, as they said, as a small time governor of a state in the United States, but not anybody that is ready to take the world stage. That's what played out the rest of the primary. But no, at the very beginning, the forces that control the Republican Party, the forces of money on Wall Street, of the globalist corporations, of what big tech aspects that the Republicans have in big tech, particularly the donors in Fox News and the Murdochs, all came together with one mission and one mission only: to keep Donald Trump from getting the Republican nomination and returning to the White House. And that has been an epic fail. That's why what happened last night is really the beginning of the greatest comeback, I think, in the history, not just of American politics, not modern, but I think in all politics that had been written about in history. I don't think you've ever seen a comeback against the forces arraigned against him.
Well, you've got 7.5 months, and I had the privilege of being at an NRA rally when the president spoke, and then down in South Carolina, and nothing sets you up for a Trump rally. Doesn't matter how steeped in politics you are, this is something different. But you get 7.5 months. This is a hard slog, and everything the establishment has thrown at him has failed. And you're looking to wonder what else they can come up with: lawsuits, with financial hits. It's all fallen by the wayside, and you now have Trump, an energetic individual at 77 who can talk for an hour and 40 minutes against someone who can do 5 minutes of press conference, and that's about it. This is the most important election I've certainly known in my lifetime, and that's not overstating it, because it's not only the U.S., are at a critical point, but actually this is an election for the world and for the West and for freedom everywhere.
That's why I don't even call it an election anymore. I call it a clash of two opposing powers. your point you just made is the relevant point. When you go to a Trump rally, and every one of your viewers and listeners, if you ever get a chance, if you go to a Trump rally, it's like something you've never been to in your entire life. The people are great. They're friendly. It's just an amazing energy that come out. But the forces that are arraying against him know that. They understand it. It's a pure populist. And now today, Axios is talking about African-Americans coming to Trump, Hispanics coming to Trump in record amounts. New York Times, NBC News had Asian-Americans in record amounts from 18% now to 32%, all shifting to MAGA. Why? This is a populist nationalist movement. It's a movement based upon sovereignty. Sovereignty of your nation and sovereignty of the individual citizen, right? That's what America First is about. We want a movement like this to spring up in every country of the world, and eventually it'll happen in England at some time, I think, in the not too distant future as the Tories collapse because they're essentially Labor light. But the people that are arraying against him know about those rallies and know about the energy of the people. That's exactly what they're trying to thwart. They do not want the United States of America run by the people. They give a lot of lip service to the people, but when they actually look at the people and they actually look at this populist movement, it shocks them. The elites in this country are scared, and they realize, because in our imperial capital, there's a saying, not in the room, not in the deal. And Donald Trump put the American people, he put MAGA and the deplorables, working class people of every ethnicity, race, religion, all of it. He put them not only in the room, he put them at the head of the table. And that is an unforgivable sin among our elites. And that's why this opposing, there's no area for compromise here. If you look at every issue, there's a bright line drawn on every issue out there. So there's no even ability to compromise. People said, we got to bring the country together. We have a group hug. That's just not going to happen. One side's going to win here and one side's going to lose. And that's why that's so big. Now, what does change this and its importance, and it's a historical moment. That's how important. It's an inflection point for the world this November. There's lead-ups to it. The European parliamentary elections, there's a lot of things are going to happen from around the world that we'll start to see pieces like that together. The one thing that's happened here is the Democrats, being crafty and cunning, have hardwired in the House of Representatives election to the president. What do I mean by that? They just lost the ability to take Trump. So the lawfare, what they're doing in lawfare, one of the things was to keep Trump off the ballot. They believe in democracy so much, they don't want you to have the opportunity to vote for it. So they lost in keeping off the ballot because he's an insurrectionist, number one, because he's not an insurrectionist. We have very specific laws about that. So they lost 9-0, and they were shocked because even the most progressive judges said, hey, you can't do that. So he's on the ballot. Now they've come up with Jamie Raskin and the radicals in the House with, okay, he can be on the ballot. He can actually even win on the ballot. But we believe he's an insurrectionist. So if the Democrats take the majority in the House, and this is like in Commons, it's almost tied. You're talking about a shift of maybe 5 or 6 districts. They have already said they will not seat him. That they will, they deem he's an insurrectionist. They have a committee that's now being torn apart of being, suppressing evidence and perjury and all that as information comes out. They said, we consider him an insurrectionist. We're going to run on the ticket. We're going to run on making the case he's an insurrectionist. And if we take the House on, and I'm picking a random date, January 6th, said on 6th January, when we certify the elections, they've said, we're not going to certify him to sit as president of the United States. So this means the House race is everything. Also, just think about what would happen with President Trump, that winning an election that is monitored by a fair election. He wins, and then they go. They don't question him winning. They question the fact that they don't question he's winning. In fact, they took a poll. Rasmussen took a poll. 57% of Democrats, 57% of Democrats support their representatives in not seating Trump, in not certifying the elections. And the question was, if Trump cheated, if Trump stole it, if Trump went against the rules, would you not say, he says, if Trump won, would you support Jamie Raskin and the Democrats for saying he's ineligible to actually serve in the capacity of president? 57% of Democrats said yes. This is my case about, you can't compromise here. You can't, this is one side's going to win and one side's going to lose. We have to not just hold the House, but pick up seats. This will be the most intense. I think we have 236 days in a wake up until 5 November. And I can tell your audience, it's going to be insanely intense every day.
Let me ask you something which I'm kind of at pains over, but want to raise it, and that is, of course, Trump's stand on the vaccine. He's got pillared for doing that truth post. But at the same time, actually, no one's perfect. And if you look at who actually is in the race, RFK is not going to win. So it is against Trump and Biden. And you've got a choice of those two. Kind of how did you see that? And are we looking at that issue, making it too big when the focus should be on the economy and on the border purely for an election? And that's something that can be dealt with later.
Look, we pride ourselves on being the show and the audience that built up over time. We were first ones to call the pandemic as being from the Wuhan lab, a bioweapon by the PLA. We were the first on coverage on all this. I'm not vaxxed. We're the beating heart of the MAGA movement, the show. That's why I have so many people on. We're the beating heart of going after Pfizer, going after Moderna. The 3,500 members of our audience have worked with Naomi Wolf and others to prove this. You know, to me, it's a experimental gene therapy to be experimented. I think vaccine industry. So people know what Warren believes, and I'm not vaccinated. None of our staff is vaxxed. That being said, the information President Trump had at the time, presented by the people that he had at the time, they went down this path of that, and he's proud of that. And I think you're just going to have to. People are just going to have to accommodate that. That. You're not going to agree with President Trump on anything. Now, he actually says, and this, I think, the key point, he never included as a mandate. He was never going to make it a mandate of the government or the military or anything. It would be fully free men and women making that decision on their own to do it. I think that's the thing. He said, look, I put this warp speed in there. We got it in 6 months, so it should have been 10 years. It was available at the option of free men and free women. If they wanted to take it and they felt it could help, they should go ahead and do it. But he didn't force anybody, and it was never going to put any mandates on. That all came with Biden and the Biden regime, when then they start driving people out of the military and business and just try to universities, try to up, and then they try to jam it down to kids. That was all the Biden regime. So I think people just have to put yourself where President Trump was at the time. He didn't enforce it. And look, it's not perfect. There's a number of things that I don't agree with President Trump on his current thing. One thing I do agree with President Trump on is, I tell people this, 95% of the time, his first instinct is always the best instinct on whether it's travel ban, TikTok. I could go through 100 things. When Trump, boom, he's got a natural instinct to kind of cut through what the nonsense is and see the heart of the problem, which is always the key. And so, no, I think the issues are going to go much deeper than that. Is and you have these aspects. Biopharmaceutical industry is one big aspect of it. But look, the country hangs in the balance. And with the country, the Judeo-Christian West, because America is kind of at the apex of this system, of this civilization that's been around for, what, 5,000 or 6,000 years. And I think it's been the greatest civilization in the world, freed more people, created more opportunities for, you know, Schmendricks like myself and, you know, my family. Like I say, the United States, we were kicked out of every decent country in Europe, right? But we made a go of it in the States. So it's, but it's, everything's on the line now. And there's no area of compromise. And I see, this is what breaks my heart about the United Kingdom. Although I am an Irishman, I've loved British history. I've loved going to London. I started going when I was at Goldman Sachs back in the 80s. I fell in love with the place. I fell in love with the people, the history, the customs, the traditions. London is the greatest city next to Hong Kong, which has really got the British flavor to it. The old Hong Kong were my two greatest cities in the world. And it's a tragedy. I sit there, and the reason it scares me is I see what's happening in England right now is what's going to happen to the United States. Like Brexit was a forerunner. I see this situation, the politically correct nature of what's taken over the elites. And I guess it's a sense of self-loathing or disgust. But you see, when your elites stop believing in the underlying principles and precepts of a civilization, what can happen? And that's why the situation in England, I tell everybody, follow England. If you see what's happening in England, you see what's basically happening in London, in both the financial capital of the city and the political capital, and most importantly, in the cultural part of London, it is absolutely shocking. And that is going to be what's going to happen in the United States unless we thwart it. And that will be, if we don't win this election and win the House and win it all, we're going to be like England in very short order.
I agree. Have to win or it's game over. Can I ask you about the GOP? Because I've read here about the elections for the chair, and it seems as though Trump has retaken that, because the GOP was railed against Trump nonstop and seemed to be the enemy just as much as the Democrats were. How important are those votes of oversight of the GOP? And how does that then affect and help Trump moving towards November?
Well, our system, the GOP, when you talk about the GOP, it is a system of 50 state parties. And those state parties down to the district level should be where the robust nature of your politics are. The problem is the GOP is a lot of dry rot. It's like an old ship in Nelson's Navy, right? That may look beautiful from the outside, but inside the hull and all the main parts of it are just rotted away. And a crew that's maybe not trained, that's what's happened to the GOP. Over time, it just became a donor base and they fell back on, I know in British politics, it's hard to imagine, but billions of dollars will be spent. In British politics, it's a very small amount of money that really gets into politics. We're going to spend billions of dollars in this election cycle, and almost the vast majority of it is to go to television ads. The television channels make a fortune, the local TV stations, the political operatives that make the ads and sell it and advise the candidates take about 20% off the top. This is how they get filthy rich, and they keep driving people to television. But what had happened, it lost its grassroots nature. Now, in the old days, that wasn't so important. But as the Tea Party, and then following the Tea Party, the Trump movement really became a grassroots, blue-collar, working-class movement. And even in the middle class, it was, even though people are in the upper middle class, they reverted back to the roots of their parents and grandparents, understanding those values. The Republican Party under Trump became a populist, nationalist, traditionalist party, right? And saw that even the conservative movement and Conservative Inc. were kind of controlled opposition. That the reason the country had gotten in such bad shape of the managed decline of our elites is that you didn't really have a party in opposition. Remember, the British system, which we really took, we took a combination of ancient Rome and the British system and kind of merged them together, is an adversarial system. You're supposed to be adversaries to make your points and have political combat, and then the process goes forward. What had happened is that, just like the Tories, when you said on my show, you call them the other socialist party, this is what happens, is that these parties get very comfortable with governing. They get very intimidated by the media calling them bad names like xenophobe or racist, and they just kind of go along. They get marginal changes, or they slow the process of decline. The American people rejected this, and this is why Trump really took the populist nationalist movement 20 years from where we have been. You know, he's admitted he was not a populist nationalist at the beginning. He had those inklings. You heard it in his statements as a businessman. But then he kind of galvanized very early on in the CPAC speeches, et cetera, speaking in a non-political vernacular, speaking in a vernacular the working class people, you know, Shaw says only connect. He would connect really in the heart, in the soul of people, saying, hey, I know this guy's never been a politician. I know he's never held office, but I not just like what he says. I like the cut of his jib, and I like the kind of manly nature that he'll stand in the breach and not back down. You know, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't give two F's, right? They like that. They wanted a fighter against the system. And this is what we've had today. But the Republican Party continued to fight him. But like I said, this thing that happened last night, we became really the nominee with winning the delegates. They have fought him for the last 4 years. They set up these. We spent $400 million in 2 years in this fake primary, in these phony debates. And the debates were just people on national TV so they could hammer Trump by how Trump's a demon, right? And then CNN and MSNBC play it not ad nauseum because the donors thought it might work, it might take him out. So, no, the Republican Party now, I think from the grassroots perspective, the old regime is gone. And put people more aligned with Trump there, I think they're kind of in shock a little bit. Some of the first announcements that have been made are not exactly MAGA fire breathers. So our political system in the two-party system, the consulting class in the Republican Party, the consultants really run and political operatives run the Republican Party much more. The Democrats are run by big donors and activist groups, Soros-backed activist groups. You very rarely see many big-name consultants or advisors on TV. They really took that out about 50 years ago, because they understood that this will end up controlling it. The Republican Party actually doubled and tripled down on it. So the party is actually run by operatives and who make a tremendous amount of money and consultants. And so I think people, when they saw what's happened the last couple of days, a lot of people still sitting there saying, hey, what's really, I know Laura Trump's involved, but what's really up? One last thing. The Republican Party still, and this is why it's so vital and why the MAGA base has a lot of leverage, because two-thirds, they raise about $200 million a year, and I think in a presidential year before $500 million, two-thirds of that money is from small donors, people giving 50 bucks every couple of months. Okay, that's the driving force. And those small donors, because they saw them not supporting Trump, and they provide a very important thing. Remember, state party level, go all the way down. Voter integrity, not having elections stolen, get out the vote. That is really should be the function of the party, not the campaign. And here the campaign's kind of had to do it. People should understand that money to President Trump has been very tight. He has $100 million in legal bills. All lawfare has nothing to do with him personally. It's all about him running as a candidate, the only reason he has it. So this thing with the Republican Party, it was good to clean out house of what was there, and we're going to have to see how many MAGA fighters they get in going forward.
Can I chat just as a final point on how people can actually be part of this? Because you've got the media, you've got the air war, of which war we're very much part of. Then you had Joshua Phillip on earlier today from Epoch Times. You've got Newsmax, you've got others. And then into that, you brought in Bill Blaster App and the Force Multiplier Academy. And that is from the grassroots up. That's a different. But tell us how people can play a part, because this battle is huge.
War Room's different in one regard. And I think about War Room, I think about my grandfather, my dad. My grandfather never went past the third grade. At 10 years old, he was working on a railroad as the junior paymaster, going around with a pistol, stop to stop to pay the workmen, I think on a daily basis back then, the laborers that would work on the rail line as they built the railroad. And then he became a lineman for the phone company. My dad, same thing, started as a lineman of the phone company, never went past high school, but they were incredibly well-read. They read the paper every day. They talked a lot about business and the economy and politics every day in the house, history. We would go to all the battlefields and do all the things, go to the Navy ships, all of that. It's one of the things that inspired me to become a naval officer, because as a young kid, I knew about Nelson's Navy. I knew about the Royal Navy. I knew about World War II and World War I, Civil War. These things were kind of taught in you. The one thing I saw is the ability to use your agency. Everything in life is about using your personhood and your agency to drive things forward in your personal life, in your spiritual life, and in your political and civic lives. We've structured this show about one thing. We try to give, because I was trained at both Georgetown and Harvard and then at Goldman Sachs, to know how to consolidate information down to present it to boards of directors, CEOs, and chairmen, people that have to make big decisions on the best information available at the time. So we structure the show just like we're doing a boardroom presentation. We structure the show that we are focused on key decision makers, but we understand our audience are working class people, many of whom don't have college degrees, maybe not even have high school degrees, and middle-class people that maybe have college or advanced degrees, or even some work at hedge funds or news producers, but they all have a thirst for knowledge. And so that's why we get a wide spectrum of people that we curate to have really smart, tough people on the show, right? And it's all about using your agency, about getting involved. Number one, you can be a force multiplier in the information war. If you're watching a show just to push stuff out, to push clips out, to connect with people, to talk about it, to talk about it in your neighborhood, just Obama had structured this as grassroots movement. And when he first beat Hillary Clinton in 08, I studied that campaign very, very systematically, because what they had done is brilliant, right? About using people to take on, at that time, the Clintons, who are the epitome of the system. And so it's about your agency. It's about getting you engaged, giving you the tools to do this. The other thing is we actively push people to get involved, whether it's the precinct strategy, which is essentially taking over the Republican Party. The reason we could shut down the RNC is that so many people on the show, Dan Schultz and Steve Stern led the effort, signed up to become precinct men. Actually, the very lowest level of the Republican Party actually is signed up in your local precinct. And taking over those precincts, we took over a bunch of state parties, but also had the understanding of the finances of the RNC that we could turn the tap off enforce change to the RNC by cutting off their money. So it's to get you involved politically, or to get you involved culturally or civically, like school boards. So from school boards to town councils to precinct strategy, it start at the, you know, the Catholic Church has this thing called subsidiarity, that the best government's the one that's the closest down to the people where you have the biggest change. And then to realize that, hey, in doing that locally, you're changing the world. You're using leverage to change the world dynamics. I mean, it's one of the reasons the show's obsessively viewed by people at BBC or The Guardian or The New York Times, MSNBC, constantly, because they understand we're putting people who heretofore have never had a platform to all of a sudden sit there and people go, yeah, I want to follow that person. I want to do this. So we take over school boards, take over precinct strategy. You basically, this audience thwarted Fox News and the donors trying to drive Trump out of the process. Remember, War Room is the hardest court dead enders of the Trump movement. They are the fiercest defenders of President Trump, right? And they understand. That's what I'm saying. The vaccine comes in or TikTok. Hey, it's not going to be perfect, but it's good enough, right? And it's going to be some things we disagree with. But these are diehard. President Trump's the leader of our movement. President Trump's actually still, we believe, the legitimate president of the United States. He's going to win his third term. He's going to win his third campaign and getting in his second term this November. So, no, I think it's working. And everything we hear, even as we take on more complex topics, people want more and more and more, because people love information and they love when they think they feel they're getting actionable information. And that's what we try to do on the show.
Steve, I really do appreciate your time. I know War Room, 4 hours a day, you're putting out information, educating the public. So thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you. Love the show. You guys keep it up.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. Donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.